All of the major news stories made simple and easy for your listening pleasure. We'll break it down for you in keywords. And for the segment, we're joined by Adam. Good morning.
Well, hello, Lena.
What is happening?
That was a bit of a pause before I named my name.
You forgot. Oh, it was a dramatic pause.
Okay.
Was that not clear?
No, I like the introduction. Thank you.
I feel like I force a thank you out of our guests. I do apologize.
Well, I'm always grateful.
Today is a special day for Arirang Radio. Did you know this?
I did not.
It's our 18th anniversary.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
18. The legal age to drink in the UK.
I don't know what that does for a radio station, but thank you for the clarification. Yeah. It's something to celebrate. Pop a champagne.
Yeah. Some Dom Perignon. So other champagnes are available.
Do you have any specific Arirang Radio memories that you want to share with our listeners? Any exciting ones? Or was your appearance on Good Morning Seoul your first Arirang Radio appearance?
First Arirang Radio appearance, yes. But I left for a bit and then came back, so that was memorable.
How so? You missed us?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Yeah, of course.
All right. Well, welcome back, Adam.
It's good to be back.
All right. We're going to jump into our keyword news segment. As always, hopefully clarifying some of these major headlines for you this morning, starting with our first pick of the day.
National debt.
So the Korean government has unveiled an aggressive spending increase for next year, which is expected to push up the nation's debt to a record level. So run us through the details, Adam.
Yes, Korea plans to spend a record 604 trillion won next year, and that's an 8% increase from this year's budget. Now, the record spending plan will take Korea's debt to GDP ratio to 50.2%. That's the largest on record. It'll also make Korea's national debt surpass 1,000 trillion won next year for the first time ever. Psychologically significant milestone. Now, in other words, each Korean citizen will be burdened with more than 20 million won debt.
When you put it like that.
Yeah, so it is a bit worrying, but there are reasons for it. Now, the finance ministry's blueprint for its fiscal management between 2021 and 2025 showed that national debt will even exceed 1,400 trillion won in 2025. That's despite its plan to cap its spending increases at 5% starting in 2023. Now, the government emphasized its fiscal deficit will decrease significantly to 55.6 trillion won next year from the 90.3 trillion won this year, expressing an optimistic outlook for the increase in its tax revenue. So they believe that corporate and individual tax revenue will increase. So, the deficit itself won't be as large, although the outright figure, the overall figure, does seem a bit large. Yeah.
All right. As you've said, there are reasons why so much funds had to be allocated during this pandemic, particularly, it seems.
Right.
This certain relief seemed necessary. Mm. The New Deal plan requires a lot of money that goes into R&D. Mm. However, that's the figure for now.
Yeah, there are a lot of plans such as the carbon neutrality plan, the 2025 carbon neutral plan that the Moon Jae-in administration has.
It's ambitious.
And it is ambitious,
in order to basically not necessarily just compensate the businesses that need to make the transitions quickly,
right,
but to ensure that it does happen in a timely fashion, it takes a significant amount of budget.
Right. There's a lot of spending there, and also to help with the after effects of the pandemic as well. So after this whole pandemic and that carbon neutrality kind of nears its or runs its course, then the spending is what the government is saying is going to be normalized. Yeah.
All right. We'll leave it there for now. On to our second keyword of the day.
Surgery under watch.
So Korean lawmakers have passed a contentious bill that requires hospitals to place surveillance cameras in operating rooms. There will be a 2-year grace period. However, it seems that the passage is significant. There have been mixed reactions to the passage itself. Is it for the better or are there some concerns? So what's the latest?
Very controversial indeed. But the new law follows a series of medical accidents involving unqualified staff who stood in for surgeons. So that was that actually led to a death of a patient as well, which has led to the calls for the bill and the passage. Now, the Korea Alliance of Patients Organization, basically a group of patients, welcomed the passage, thanking the lawmakers who voted for the bill. They expressed hope that patients and doctors can narrow their differences before the law takes effect after this 2-year grace period. Now, the bill also has overwhelming public support as well, with a recent government survey showing 97.9% support from just under 14,000 respondents.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the bill, however, is still being met with strong objections from doctors, hospitals and medical groups. They claim the CCTVs will undermine trust in doctors, violate patient privacy and discourage doctors from taking risks to save lives, although there have been clauses that kind of taking that into account.
Consideration and trying to protect these doctors too.
Right. Because, of course, in the case of an emergency, switching on all these CCTVs, organizing, recording, and getting all the systems up and running.
Probably won't be a priority.
Yeah, when time is of the essence, which is often the case in these emergency rooms, there are clauses that kind of makes exceptions for that. Still, the doctors are objecting to it. And they also noted that some residents have already expressed their intent not to apply to surgery or surgical departments if the CCTVs are installed in operating rooms. They warn this will lead to a collapse of an essential part of Korea's medical care. So still quite contentious, a lot of mixed reactions, and the debate will still possibly go on even during this grace period, despite the bill being passed.
All right, on to our third keyword of the day.
Vaccination drive.
Korea is allowing COVID-19 vaccinations for those aged 12 to 17 starting from the fourth quarter. Health authorities have stressed that it is safe for minors to get shots amid concerns from some experts. There are other countries that have already led the way. What is the government saying?
Yeah, a senior official at the State Vaccination Task Force said the decision to lower the age threshold from 18 to 12 was made based on numerous overseas research and multiple tests and trials. He said the Pfizer vaccine was proven to be safe and effective for those aged 12 and older and approved for use in various countries. Now, the task force said minors will receive the Pfizer shot as it is the only vaccine as of yet to have received approval from the country. Around 2.7 million 12 to 17-year-olds will be eligible. Meanwhile, the rate of vaccinations for the 18 to 49 age group is gaining pace as well. Now, if things continue this way, then the government's aim of having 70% of the population inoculated with at least one shot could be achieved. It's now just a race to get as many people vaccinated before the Chuseok holiday, which is just in a few weeks' time. Now, as part of those efforts, the government may push forward the dates for vaccine reservation. There's a sense of urgency, of course, surrounding vaccinations as the fourth wave is still raging on. Health officials expect today's COVID tally to near the 2,000 mark again. Unfortunately, we are at the midweek point, so this is the time when cases do start to spike.
Speaking of which, it brings us to our fourth keyword of the day.
Medical strike.
So amid this fourth wave, it's clearly showing no signs of abating. Some estimations that it might get worse before it gets any better. Medical workers are threatening to push ahead with their strike tomorrow. Now, last-ditch talks between them and the government is scheduled for later today. Can there be an agreement to stop the strike from going forward?
Well, it's hard to tell at the moment, but since talks thus far, 12 so far have actually taken place, they've all fallen through, no agreement yet. So any likelihood of them narrowing their differences today seems quite slim. Hopefully that won't be true. Now, the two sides have held, as I said, 12 rounds of talks. So this will be the 13th today. Medical staff are saying they're being overworked, especially with the recent surge in cases. And they're also demanding better working conditions. Many nurses have actually already quit or taken leave, saying they're burnt out and compensated too little for their rigorous schedules. The government is reviewing contingency plans if the strike does go ahead, though. These include expanding operations of public hospitals and expanding the capacities of emergency rooms as well.
So does that mean taking already the exhausted personnel and making them work longer hours? I don't feel like that's a solution, right?
Well, yeah, I mean,
do they have options?
Not really.
Exactly. Hence why the tug of war continues. And it does seem very unlikely that there will be a solution reached to stop the strike from actually going forward.
Right.
All right. On to our fifth keyword of the day.
Afghan crisis.
So now turning to the crisis in Afghanistan, the European Union is vowing financial support for Afghanistan's neighbors to manage a refugee crisis at their borders. So to maybe stop too many refugees from seeking refuge in European countries.
Yeah, this is also a bit of a contentious issue as well. But at a meeting in Brussels, EU interior ministers adopted a text that pledges an unspecified amount of funds to relevant international organizations and neighboring countries of Afghanistan to host people fleeing the new Taliban regime. Now, these neighbors include Pakistan and Iran. Now, although the amount was not disclosed, there are reports suggesting it could be anywhere between 600 million and 1 billion euros. The planned financial support reflects the EU's broader goal of actually keeping Afghan migrants outside the bloc amid fears of another surge of migrants and internal disputes over the issue among member countries. They don't want a repeat of what happened in 2015 when they conjured up a similar deal with Turkey, taking in refugees from Syria.
Yeah.
There was a whole argument there, so they don't want a repeat of that.
Right.
But they do want to house or help these Afghan refugees, so they're basically urging the neighbours to house them, saying, we'll give you money to support that.
Right.
Now, the ministers are actually scheduled to meet again next month to discuss resettlement efforts as well. Now, the text by the ministers also places a strong emphasis on security, stressing the need to ensure that Afghanistan does not once again become a haven for terrorists. It currently is at the moment, so we'll have to see how that issue is resolved.
First and foremost, in the stories with Afghan refugees, it's a humanitarian crisis story, but from the American perspective, there's a lot of criticism as to, well, did or did not President Joe Biden carry this mission out in a timely fashion? Now, U.S. President Joe Biden is defending his decision to end the U.S. war in Afghanistan. Run us through what he has said so far.
Yeah, so Biden gave quite a forceful defense of his decision to pull troops from Afghanistan. He said, quote, I was not going to extend this forever war, and I was not extending a forever exit, unquote. He was speaking at the White House in his first public speech since the last American troops left Afghanistan. It's time, he said, to stop using American soldiers to remake other countries. Now, Biden also credited his administration's evacuation efforts in Afghanistan as an, quote, extraordinary success. And he also rejected criticism that his administration could have handled the evacuations better by either beginning to evacuate people earlier in the summer or by extending the timeline beyond August 31st in an effort to get more Afghan allies and Americans out of the country. Though the Taliban did say that it won't accept even a day after the deadline, Joe Biden himself was pretty adamant of sticking to that deadline despite that. Now, no matter when the US started evacuations, he said there would have been a rush to the airport and staying longer would have meant escalating conflict with the Taliban. So he seems like he's putting his foot down. He's defending his decision despite all the criticisms that he's been facing.
Now, as for carrying out more Afghan refugee missions to take them out of the country for anyone who else is eligible, it does seem like logistics gets in the way, although there were promises from all these different countries, including the United States, to continue their efforts.
Right.
All right. We'll move on to our last keyword of the day.
Defense budget hike.
Japan's defense ministry seeking an increase to its budget for next year to further strengthen the country's military. So how much are they asking for exactly?
Well, the ministry is seeking a budget of nearly 5.5 trillion yen. That's almost 50 billion US dollars. That's a rise of 2.6% from this year's budget. Now, the country's military spending has been rising for the past decade. In fact, they're citing threats posed by China's own growing military budget, as well as North Korea's nuclear ambitions. Now, the latest request will be reviewed by the finance ministry before Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga has the chance to give his approval. Japan wants to build 5 military ships and a submarine, as well as purchasing 12 Lockheed Martin F-35 fighter jets from the US. Now, the defense ministry is also requesting 105 billion yen for the development of a domestic fighter jet as well. While Tokyo cannot match Beijing's military spending, its strategy is to deter any strikes with the latest technology and equipment, so they'll be heavily investing in cybersecurity as well. There are also concerns over signs that Pyongyang is restarting its Yongbyon plutonium-producing reactor and possibly expanding its banned weapons program, something we touched on yesterday. And critics say Japan should allocate actually more money toward healthcare and other purposes instead of defense spending, especially with an aging population there as well and a kind of a struggling economy.
And also the pandemic situation that requires, I think, more immediate effects than a prolonged one. It seems that whenever it comes to budget for any country, there are always contentions as to what should be prioritized first. And the same goes for our neighboring country, Japan.
Right.
Thank you very much, Adam, for joining us on this extraordinarily special day.
Happy birthday, Arirang Radio.
I'll see you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.